What the Tech is sponsored by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/Andrew. Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. Of course, I'm joined by Paul Thorada, as I am each and every week. How are you doing, Paul?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Today is the drinking show. We haven't done one in over a month and a half.
Usually I don't prepare for the podcast at all, but today, knowing that it was a drinking show, I decided to prepare.
Well, Paul, actually, I'm looking at the notes, and you really did prepare because you added like 15 things to the notes. I had no idea.
Right. I want to stay on track because I'm going to be drifting.
So what are you drinking today?
Well, unfortunately, this is not something I can recommend to anyone unless you live within 30 miles of me. But in the Boston area, we have a brewery called Blue Hills Brewery, which is literally right down the street. And they make it's not a seasonal beer. It's just like they make it for a limited time, I guess, every year. It's called Fortis Pagus. Which is it's like a barley wine style ale. I'll show you the bottle here.
Oh, very nice.
We buy growlers and also these bottles from the brewery, but you can buy them locally too.
How close are they to you?
5 minutes.
Oh, nice.
Close. But this beer is, like I said, temporary, and we tried it, and this is one of the best beers I've ever had in my life. And we've been buying it up locally. Like, we go to the local liquor stores and whatever, and just buy whatever they have. So it's good stuff.
I'm drinking a Malbec from Argentina, and it's called Llama. That's all I know about it. I've never had this before. I just found it in the bar.
Well, that's the Winamp comment for Riley, right?
Yeah, that's the Winamp comment, because it kicks the llama's ass. So this is what I'm drinking. I also have my goblet here, my giant glass of wine. And today's going to be a fun show. It's a huge snowstorm hitting the Northeast here. We already have
snowpocalypse.
Snowpocalypse 2014. We already have like 6 inches of snow. Paul, you said you haven't gotten anything at this point, but I'm sure within the next couple hours it's going to start getting bad.
Yeah, we're supposed to get 12 to 18 inches of snow. So blizzard conditions.
Well, you're lucky you don't have to go anywhere for work.
Well, it's convenient because I won't be going anywhere, period. So next couple of days will be interesting. I guess the big question is whether the kids have school tomorrow.
I'm sure they won't.
I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
So we thought might as well drink. What else is there to do when you're snowed in? We're going to talk about, we have a couple things to talk about. We're going to make it fun.
Just drinking.
Not just drinking. And I also just got this before the show started. It says Light Pack on it. And I remember I ordered something called Light Pack on Kickstarter a while ago. Like, I funded this project like 2 years ago. I don't remember anything about it.
Like, this is probably for a Kindle they don't make anymore.
That's probably what it is. That's exactly what it is. So I'm going to open it up.
Protection thing.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, there's like a little picture frame here, so I don't know what it is. I'm going to open it up in a little bit, and we're going to get a natural reaction to the garbage that I ordered. Because I probably funded a lot of money to this project, and I thought it was really cool and a good idea about 2.5 years ago when I did it. But now it's probably not even relevant to my needs. So we're going to find out in a little bit what I ordered. I got the webcam set up for that. But before we do, Paul, why don't we do our Audible pick of the week before we embarrass ourselves at the end of the show with a live read?
Okay.
So we haven't spoken about Audible for a while, but they're back for 2014, and what a great service this is. If you're snowed in, if you're going away, I just came back from Cancun, and my wife loaded up on a bunch of audiobooks, because sometimes I don't use my credits, so she takes them. And the entire trip, that's what she listened to when we were laying on the beach or when we were traveling, we were trying to come back, we were going there. She was listening to Audible, and it's phenomenal. You get a couple hours of entertainment with an audio. Sometimes you get like 20 hours if you get like a really big book. And this is a great deal they have for our audience. It's absolutely free. You get a free audiobook if you go to audiblepodcast.com/Andrew. If you haven't signed up, go ahead and do that. You get a free audiobook, and you get to try it out, see if you like it. And you know what? Some of these audiobooks are like $40-$50, and you get it for free. It's just phenomenal. I know Paul's a big Audible fan, and you have an Audible pick this week.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny. I think a lot of people will hear the title of this and think that it's not for them, but I would ask you to give it a chance. I've been listening to this book called Driven, the subtitle being Inside BMW, the Most Admired Car Company in the World. It's written by David Kiley, who writes about or did write about automobiles for USA Today. I think that this is a fascinating book for many, many reasons. But I would just say, you know, one of the things I keep looking for are good tech industry books. And they're few and far between these days. This book, in many ways, is kind of the next best thing because it talks about a very admired company in a different industry, but in ways that I think will resonate with people who are familiar with all of the big tech companies, you know, Google, Apple, Microsoft, whatever. BMW has a brand that I think is closely associated with Apple in the tech world. And the way that the company went about making that happen and the way that the press talks about the company, the way that it, the company kind of presents itself is actually very much like Apple. And just the first chapter alone, which is just sort of an overview, is kind of fascinating from that perspective. But this one's good for me because, you know, over the summer I listened to a lot of shorter books and, I've been walking a lot. And this is the first book in a couple where I've gone out of my way to listen to this. You know, I'll listen to it in the car. I'll listen to it when I'm, you know, shaving. I'll go for walks just to listen to it. It's really, really more interesting than maybe it sounds if you're not into cars. It's actually a very, very good book.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I mean, I'm a car guy, so I absolutely love these things. But you're absolutely right. The way that they have marketed themselves is very similar to what Apple does.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually fascinating. In fact, you know, just if you're familiar with the tech industry, I wish there was some way you could just listen to the first chapter because that part alone is you could almost replace the word, you know, the word BMW with the word Apple, and it would make sense. Like, it's very interesting.
And more than Mercedes.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Way more than Mercedes, yeah.
Yep. It's
because BMW is, you know, Mercedes is a luxury brand. But BMW is a brand for people who care about driving, first and foremost. It is a luxury brand, right? But it's one of those things where the people who spend money on this do it because they love the thing. It's not just about being pampered or being in a nice car. It's about being in a well-balanced car. You know, this is a company that makes rear-wheel drive cars in an age in which front-wheel drive is kind of the norm because that creates a balance.
Yeah, and they've stuck with it forever.
Yeah, it's amazing. And again, like I said, you can make these really interesting comparisons with this company to Apple. And it actually, I have to say, the other thing that occurred to me, obviously BMW and Apple, Mercedes, have been around a lot longer than Apple or Microsoft or Google or whatever. And the one thing that Apple lacks in many ways is a Mercedes, right? That there is no company that is constantly going having a back and forth with them. You know, certain BMWs have been influenced by certain Mercedes. Many Mercedes vehicles have been influenced by BMW models. They've kind of gone back and forth over which one is the best selling of those kinds of brands every year and so forth. It's very interesting, and the parallels are there. There are certainly differences too, but I'm surprised by how interested I am in this story. It's very well done.
Very cool. We'll have a link in our show notes. Obviously, it's Driven, Inside BMW, the most admired car company in the world, and you can get it for free on Audible if you use.
By the way, if you search for Driven on Audible, the second hit is includes a picture of a woman in her underwear, which is not the Driven book that I'm talking about. It's the, okay. It's the one with the BMW logo.
Let's see. I'm putting in Driven. Oh, it is Driven. Driven series, book one, by Kay Bromberg.
Looks like some kind of a romance novel.
In the world full of willing women.
Yeah.
I'm a challenge to get.
Right. That's not the book.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You know what? Well, that is my pick this week.
I've never listened to it. But
Driven, the romance novel, is my pick this week.
nice.
So you could go and pick either one if you go to audiblepodcast.com/Andrew. That's audiblepodcast.com/Andrew. And I want to thank Audible for supporting What the Tech. Paul, There was interesting story came out yesterday, and I wanted to talk about this for a little bit because I don't know if this is necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, but HP is bringing Windows 7 back. And they're not
I love that notion, by the way. Like, they're bringing it back.
They're reviving it. They've told Microsoft enough is enough. Now, a lot of companies do this, right? A lot of companies offer the older version of the operating system. I've seen Dell do it. And a lot of times they do it for enterprise, obviously. But there's a big marketing thing behind this where they're saying, due to popular demand, it's back.
That's what's different.
That is what's different.
Yeah, this is interesting because, like you said, you actually hit the nail on the head there. The truth is, this has always happened. You know, companies like HP and Dell that target businesses have always offered the previous version. You know, that's what they do. Microsoft makes it available. It's there for a reason. You know, people that have volume licensing agreements with Microsoft can downgrade to a previous version of Windows. That's the point. You know, it's always the way it's been. The difference with this campaign, from what I can tell, is what you just said, that they're kind of advertising it, you know, backed by popular demand. They're kind of positioning it at individuals, right? Not necessarily just to businesses. So it's very interesting. I think the only thing I have to say about that is that HP, more so than most PC makers, has entered into an interesting new phase in their relationship with Microsoft, where they're kind of, you know, frenemies, right?
But something seemed to have changed a couple of years ago? Because remember the whole WebOS thing? I mean, they were really saying that, you know, we're going to start pushing WebOS, and first we're going to do dual boot, and then after, you know, the initial launch period, we're going to have exclusive WebOS PCs out on the market. And I feel like since then, something changed between them.
Well, that thing might be Meg Ryan. Meg Ryan.
She gets in the way of things.
I'm still stuck on the romance thing. But rather Meg Whitman. She's kind of a fiery individual. And I think in the kind of old school way that HP was for many years, this type of thing would never have come up. And of course, you know, historically, HP has been Microsoft's closest partner. They were always the lapdog. They would come along on every little Microsoft crusade. The Media Center, smart displays, you know, pocket PCs, whatever you want to do, HP would do it. And that's obviously changed. And so you see HP Chromebook, you see HP doing Android, you see mixed devices with different OSs, all that kind of stuff. It's weird. So them, you know, kind of publicly promoting this, I see this in many ways as a little bit of a dig at Microsoft. Like, say, screw you guys.
It is.
You know, we told you Windows 8 stunk and you went ahead with it and now you're getting what you deserve. It's kind of an interesting, I don't know, relational dynamic.
No, I think it's a major dig. And, you know, it's like I said, a lot of people think this is a big deal, but it's not. Them actually having Windows 7 as an option is not a big deal.
That's not the big deal.
It's the marketing behind it.
Yeah, the marketing is fascinating, right? So they have, see if I can bring this thing up. I had it somewhere. I don't know. I can't find it now, but you know, it was backed by popular demand, right? I think what HP is suggesting is that, first of all, they're not the world's largest PC maker. That's something that changed over the past year. Their PC sales as a percentage of the overall market have declined. I'm sure they blame Windows 8 on part of that, on a big part of it. And, you know, the backed by popular demand, it almost makes me wonder if it's not so much popular demand, but they've seen a fall off in demand, and that must be because of Windows 8. So if they could just go back to Windows 7, that would solve all of their problems. You have to remember, during the Windows 7 lifetime, that 3 years, PC sales, or I should say Windows license sales, were extremely consistent, right? Roughly 20 million units a month for that entire 3-year period. That has stopped. And, you know, again, we can't just blame Windows 8, but it's very interesting. I mean, this one's interesting. I typically enjoy this kind of thing. I like when big companies go at it, you know, against each other. This one's a little weird because they're partners too. I'm not sure what to think of that.
By the way, sorry guys, we had a little outage with the feed. I'm assuming it's attributed to the weather we're having here. So everything is back.
How dare you?
How dare you let it snow on your fiber lines. No, but do you think there's going to be long-term effect from this, or do you think Microsoft's going to be like, you know, that pisses us off a little bit, but from the snowstorm, yes. Do you think Microsoft's going to be upset at the
snow? No, I don't know. I don't think there's going to be any long-term. I mean, the thing is, too, it's interesting. I don't know if you click through to their site, but if you look at the systems that they're selling with Windows 7, shocker, desktop computers and traditional laptops, right? Non-touch-based laptops.
And so, they're offering a discount. It's $150 less.
Yeah, but you know what? That doesn't really mean much because PC makers offer these kind of deals all the time. This one, like I said, I think this is kind of a dig at Microsoft. In other words, this perceived savings is just, here's a dig at Microsoft. Windows 8 doesn't cost them $150 more. In fact, the way this should work, if you went through a configurator, is you would choose Windows 7 or Windows 8, and the price doesn't change, right? They're not saving money because they're offering you Windows 7. So this is a little bit of a, I don't know, subterfuge is a strong term, but you know, they're selling traditional computers. And I think in many ways, this is a little bit of a probe. But does this work? I mean, imagine if they do this and they see some major surge in these kind of sales of PCs, right? I mean, that's actually kind of interesting data.
What does that mean for Microsoft that that's the case?
Does it seem like my video is shaking to you? Like, look up at the top. Does it seem like...
Well, when you're jumping around, a little bit.
Why is that shaking? It's so weird.
But I am getting like the radio interference.
Yeah, that I can't help you with.
What is it? What is that?
I don't know. It must be. I had a bunch of phone devices in front of my computer, and the GSM style phones have that radio interference effect.
Yeah.
With speakers and all that. I think it's related to that.
Never heard of that bad. Wacky. Yeah. What is this? But let's say they see a huge surge, right?
You know, imagine, right?
Let's play that game. They see a huge surge in sales for the first quarter because of this, and those numbers. How will they reflect as far as Microsoft's daily practice and you know what they do?
That doesn't impact something.
But I mean, how does it impact Windows 9?
Microsoft is already doing what it's doing, right? Windows 8.1 update 1 is going to happen. Threshold Windows 9 will happen. These things are already happening. The HP does not impact that now, you know. So we'll see. But, you know, I think what they can claim at least is that when Windows 9, I think would be the big one. But, you know, subsequent versions of Windows to Windows 8 have improved the situation on the desktop side. And so, you know, HP someday will be able to say, see, you know, we made, you know, Windows 9 is here. Look, it's, you know, better for the desktop. But they were always heading there, so.
But I mean, Windows 9, the desktop is back. You boot into desktop, the start menu's back. I mean, so all these things that people don't like about Windows 8, guess what? It's they fixed it.
Well, but that's, you know, most of the things that people complain about in Windows are things that don't exist anymore either. You know, anyway, so I mean, it's, you know, I never did use Windows 8 because it's blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, have you tried Windows 8.1? No. Well, okay. So then you're not really necessarily the best source of information about how good or bad it is, you know, but those people still tend to have a big opinion about it. I think Windows 8.1 is a huge improvement. So,
I think I asked you this last week.
Desktop computers, it's fine.
I think I asked you this question last week, but are there any hints at a revamp to desktop with Windows 9? Now that we're kind of going to be desktop centric again with, you know, floating Metro applications and boot to desktop.
Oh, well, yeah. So, yeah, I've heard that Metro apps will run as Windows on top of the desktop. That's one thing. I'm not sure I would call that a desktop improvement. Mary Jo Foley had an article, and I want to say it was back in December, about SKUs that would occur for Windows 9, I guess.
What was that word you broke up?
Sorry, SKUs, like product versions.
SKUs, okay.
So, for example, today we have Windows 8, what's really called Core internally, Windows 8. We have Windows 8 Pro. And then we have Enterprise, actually, I should add. And we have Windows RT. What she was saying was that in the future, they're moving toward this system where there's this version that, you know, there's going to be like a Metro version, like the device version. That would be phone/tablet. No desktop. There'll be this version that will offer both, you know. And possibly there'll be this version that's for the enterprise or for businesses where they only offer the desktop stuff, by and large. That's interesting, right? Because I think the big problem with Windows 8 fundamentally was that they were jamming too much non-essential UI down people's throats, regardless of what kind of computer you had. So if you bought a tablet, you had to use the desktop. If you bought a desktop computer, you had to use the mobile OS. And I think people got a little fed up about that. So I think they've been moving toward making that better. And you know, Windows 8.1 is a nice step in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about 9. I really rely on desktop when it comes to production. So I haven't upgraded. There's been no need. There's been no improvements to performance. I tried to see if there's any kind of video performance improvements within the core of Windows. There's really no changes. So I'm staying. But with Windows 9, I mean, now you're talking 2015, so 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, 6 years. I'm running a 6-year-old OS. I think it's time to upgrade after that point.
Sure. And by the way, I should say that, you know, there's some hope. I've called on Microsoft to do this for a few years now, that there's no reason the desktop environment can't advance or evolve. I mean,
how would you change it if you were to, you know?
Well, the issue here is one of transition. I mean, there will always be some phone that hopefully didn't just break, fell on the floor.
What was
that? Was my Nexus 5 hitting the floor?
Well, it was Android. It's fine.
It doesn't matter. It's Android. The issue, you know, with Windows 8 in many ways is that the transition is really harsh, right? You have this mobile environment, you have this established desktop environment. The mobile environment's brand new, so it's got all kinds of problems. It doesn't work well on desktop computers and all that kind of stuff. I've often wondered why they can't improve the desktop. You know, go back and add APIs to Win32 so that you could create a new version of Office or Photoshop or Chrome or whatever that utilize these APIs, so that on a Windows 8, or I guess now Windows 9 system, that thing could emulate a full-screen Metro application, that it would get rid of the Chrome. You could run it in a special full-screen mode, but you wouldn't see the taskbar. And so if you were using it on a touch-based system, users don't care how apps are made. You know, I've got like the Mail app running, which is a Metro app. I've got the Calendar app running. That's a Metro app. And I use, you know, Photoshop Elements, and that's a desktop app, but who cares? I mean, why would I as a user care? The problem is they're only doing the advances on the Metro side. I mean, why not bring some of that stuff, to the desktop and ease that transition? So you've got this person who says, you know, I've got these apps that I bought on the desktop that I either need or want to use. I want to use the new stuff, but I just have one or two that I want to bring with me. You know, make that possible. And I think there was a certain, I was going to say it was political stuff, but obviously making a new platform it takes a lot of time, it's hard, all that kind of stuff. I'm sure all of their efforts.
Yeah, but I also think it had to do with the grand vision, you know, of what they envisioned the future of Windows was, and there was no place for desktop in that world.
But so here's the thing. In other words, Microsoft is going to stand up on a stage and say, attention, world. The future is Metro. It's mobile. So we're going to jam it down your throat. We're going to put it on the desktop version of Windows. Well, if it's the future, then why are you putting it on this desktop OS? I mean, so we don't have those computers yet. And the ones that are available, we're not that interested in. I mean, you know, if you're going to transition people, you have to offer a transition, you know. And that would be one way to do it. It would be one way to say to Adobe, for example, I'll just use them as a big, you know, as a primary app provider. You don't have to throw out all of this code you wrote for Photoshop. You can do a little addition here and there, and this thing will suddenly become more viable within this Metro environment. It's weird because Apple made this transition, and I'm going to get some of the names wrong, but if you are familiar with Apple's transition from the classic Mac OS to Mac OS X, they had a full-fledged Mac OS X environment, like a development environment, which I want to say was called, not Carbon, it's called something, I don't know, whatever it is. But then they had another one for the old apps. And so you could write to these APIs and you could get some of the services. You know, imagine a Windows desktop app that could take advantage of the share charm. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that'd be great. Great.
Why not do that? I think Microsoft was pushing so far on the mobile side, on the Metro side, that they kind of lost sight of the fact that Windows desktop doesn't disappear overnight. Maybe this is a 10-year process, and maybe part of that process involves letting desktop application developers make small changes to their apps so that they're more friendly in this new environment. Well, behind the scenes, maybe they're working on a major new version that is full-fledged Metro.
You know, someone in our chat room just said, and I'm sorry, it scrolled by, but they brought up something interesting. They said the problem with Windows was that it really needed a serious refresh. And I think you've said it too, and I've said it too. Windows, essentially, desktop has looked exactly the same, except for minor tweaks here and there to the UI, since Windows 98, since XP. You know, it's essentially the same exact thing. The start menu's there, and that's why people had a breakdown when it was something new. They couldn't adapt to the changes because they're so used to it. For the last 20 years, they've been using the same thing. But we could all agree
they
that...
But they haven't really, right?
No, they haven't. But we could all agree that they needed an improvement. I just think they pretty much said, well, yeah, we agree too. We need an improvement. Here it is. Everything is different. And that's where everything went wrong with the average user. You know, the person that's thinking they're getting a start button and they're thinking they're getting a task menu. And when they pick up Metro, they kind of freak out. They don't understand what this is.
You know, I had a mini epiphany, and I want to be careful with that term because it's it suggests a far deeper thought than what I actually had. But for me, an epiphany. Mary Jo on Windows Weekly was talking about the Office team and the ribbon UI and how they'd done that. And it suddenly occurred to me, you know, it's very interesting. The team of people that put the ribbon on Office, which was very controversial for the time, was the same group of people, basically, that put certainly the same management, that put Windows 8 in play, you know, that made the Metro stuff and replaced the start menu with the start screen. And the thing that those two things have in common, aside from the people that made it, is that neither one of them offered a way to go back to the previous version of the UI. In Office, we sort of excused this because, well, actually, a lot of people didn't, but I did, because Office always had this sort of concept of painting the pig, you know, that as they evolved Office over the years, they would make these tiny UI changes just so you could look over someone's shoulder and look at the Office toolbars and say, oh, that's Office 2000 or that's Office 2003. You could tell just from the toolbar design. And so obviously with the ribbon, they can kind of do the same thing. But it's notable that Windows 8 is the first time in the history of Windows where there is no sense of fallback to the legacy UI. You know, in Windows 7, Vista, whatever, you could go back to the what we would call the Windows 2000 style of start menu. You know, Windows 8 was the first time where it was like, nope, it's not even there as an option. In fact, while they were developing Windows 8, I had sources at Microsoft tell me that that team actually had people expunging code from Windows so that there was no way that a third party could go in and enable that feature.
To now, bring back the classic shell.
So you've seen third-party tools that bring back like a start menu, but that code is theirs. Like it's not the Microsoft. It's not buried in Windows. They didn't bring it back out. They made their own. You know, it's easy to emulate.
Is it weird that they made Microsoft on their side made a decision to say even if you wanted to do this, you cannot.
That's my point. And so this team of people did this kind of on their own, and they took a very hard line view of it. They were going to push their view of the future on everybody. They got away with it with Office. And I have to say, you know, in the case of Office with the ribbon, even though I know people will still dispute this, I think they made the right decision. I think that was the right thing. And Windows 8, Windows is a little tougher because this is the whole shell now. And that was not necessarily so successful. And I think we could at least agree that, well, people can certainly work around this stuff. The Metro stuff, the start screen especially, it doesn't make as much sense.
As far as the start menu goes in Windows 9, have they hinted that they're reviving the original, you know, what we think of as a start menu and the task bar on the bottom? Is it going to be that, or is this something new that's a little Metro-wise?
I haven't heard explicitly, but what I did hear was that there's still some debate as to what form this takes. And so I would guess, just based on the way things are going, that there will be an option where you can not use the start screen. You'll have a start menu of some kind. Beyond that, it's not clear if it's going to be the Windows 7 start menu, which I think is what people really want, or some truncated version of the start menu, which is like certain things.
But see, I don't think it should be that. I don't think it should be the Windows 7 start menu.
No, I don't either, actually. But here's the problem. So I don't either. But the truth is, I don't think they had to bring back the start button, and they did. And I don't think that they have to do anything more than bring back the start button, but they will. So it doesn't matter what I think or what I'm comfortable with. The truth is this. If they bring back something that is not at least the Windows 7 start menu, people will still complain, and this will dog them. You know, like I think we can accept that not everyone's going to be happy, but there's going to be problems if it isn't at least the Windows 7 start menu. So we'll see. I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm sure it will not be satisfactory, yeah. Whatever it is.
It's a fascinating topic for me because I'm still surprised that they went back on a lot of things, and not saying that they shouldn't have or they should have. I'm just surprised that they were quick to respond to all the criticism rather than saying, well, no, this is our grand vision. This is what we're doing. You're going to get used to it, and people just get used to it. But
it's a tough one because on the one hand, I think they were making it up as they went along, right?
That's amazing. Weird stuff. That's amazing. Yeah, if that's the case, that's just.
Well, you know, the downside. If you've ever watched The Simpsons, right? I always think of the episode where Mensa takes over the government of the town, and it's a disaster. And so, you know, sometimes the lesson there is that sometimes when you have smart people, they get a little caught up in how smart they are, and they forget that there are other viewpoints and other needs, and that not everyone wants things to be the way that they want, and that, you know, whatever. It kind of goes from there. So I don't want to call out any names, but, you know, over the years I had discussions with guys on that team and asked them questions about what they were doing, and I very pointed questions. You know, seriously, do you really use these full screen, stupid, you know, giant icons and whatever on a desktop screen with 27-inch whatever, and it's great, and you can do this and then. I think you get caught up in what you're doing. You lose sight of the fact that this isn't satisfying a need.
I also think that there's a vision of what the post PC era looks like, and that you know, they said we're in a post PC era. Well, kind of, but not really, right? We still rely on the PC. We're not doing everything on the tablet. We're not doing everything on our phone. Who knows what the vision of the post PC era will be in 10 years? I mean, it could be totally different than what we understand as the post PC era.
A PC is, you know, we always go back to the Steve Jobs thing, right? The car and truck thing, and you can get really silly with it because there are motorcycles and crossover vehicles and whatever. But you know, let's just beat it to death. What the heck? I mean, the PC is like a gigantic diesel truck, you know, and there are some people who need that truck, you know. And those guys do real work, and they're real men and all that kind of stuff. And they work on construction sites, and they drill oil and whatever they do. I don't know. They're ranchers, whatever. But most people don't. And even in my own usage, and in fact, I meant to write this article, it's like 2 weekends ago. It's been a while. It's sitting here on my desktop incomplete, and maybe I never write it. I don't know. But, you know, when I redo a computer, like I reset the OS and I reinstall apps and everything, you know, the amount of stuff that I put back on a PC after a reset like that,
it's far less,
is minimal.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Office. I happen to use Photoshop because I do graphics for my website and everything, but that's not very typical. Some people may use Visual Studio or some developer tool. I happen to like a Twitter app that I use and all that kind of stuff, but there's not a lot. And the reason is, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever it was, you would do everything on that PC. If you were going to use Facebook, maybe it didn't exist, but if you were, you would only use that on the PC. If you were going to do email, you would only do that on the PC. You're going to browse the web, you're going to use a PC. If you're going to play a game, you're going to use a PC. For a lot of people, most people, that stuff has all moved on to these other devices. When you can check your email very quickly on a phone, and you have a tablet, and you can do all that kind of stuff, The times that you have to go back and use an actual PC are far fewer. So the PC you have lasts longer. You stay on the same version of Windows for a longer time. You install fewer apps. And that device becomes purely, for most people, again, speaking generally, there are always exceptions, but for most people, A PC is purely a productivity device. Actually, I would even take that further. For the people that use PCs, a PC is purely a productivity device. For most people, the PC may be a device they don't even need. You know, and that's the issue right there.
Hey, Paul, I'm on winsupersite.com, and you had an article, Why Doesn't Windows 8 Look Like This? And you had a second part to it. Where is the first part?
Well, this is like a cross-examination and a deposition.
Where is that first part? It's gone. It says, and there's a link. It says, cannot find, page not found.
All right, so, all right.
I need it.
Why doesn't, you know, this probably got lost in the cross when my site.
It did.
Why doesn't Windows 8 look like this?
Why doesn't Windows 8 just look like this? Take 2. April 26, 2012. I need take 1. It's blog number 39.
Take 2 I found.
I've been searching for years.
Right. It's funny because I found it on Windows IT Pro, but it doesn't have the screenshot.
That's so funny. I guess.
Yeah. So this is my idea for sort of a like a sidebar kind of a thing. In other words, that you should be one of the things you can. I'm sorry. I should say Windows 8 has this snap view, right? But it doesn't let you snap the desktop. I'm sorry, the start screen. And I was saying, you know, why could if you snap the start screen, you should be able to put the apps that have tile updates that you want that could be there. It would be kind of nice.
Yeah.
And they don't do that. Yeah.
I think it would be nice. Yeah, Paul, let's talk about the whole Xbox and YouTube controversy. Is this the same one that you have, the Xbox Music, or is this something different?
Xbox Music.
I'm talking about the Xbox ads.
Sorry, that should be Xbox One.
Okay. Explain to me why it's a huge deal.
Actually, I don't think it is a huge deal.
Okay, why do people think it is? Because I don't see it as a big deal.
I don't either. So if you were to go to any kind of a news site, Xbox, I should say Google News, here are some of the headlines that I see. Microsoft secretly paid YouTubers to praise Xbox One. Microsoft is paying YouTubers for Xbox One mentions. Microsoft paying YouTube personalities for positive Xbox One endorsements. It sounds like Microsoft is paying people, doesn't it?
It does.
Because it literally says, one word that I don't see in any of these headlines, allegedly. So here's the truth. Microsoft is not paying anyone to say anything positive about Xbox One and YouTube. They're not doing that. There is a company that is a promotional company, like that does this kind of thing, that is paying people to say positive things about Xbox One and YouTube. That company is not Microsoft. And this behavior, it may be repellent, kind of morally. It may even be illegal, by the way, because if you're endorsing a product in the United States, you actually have to disclose it. If you're being paid for that endorsement. Whatever, that's an FTC guideline. I guess we could take that up with the company that's doing it, but it's not Microsoft, and that's the problem I have with it. What this is probably like is some kind of a political campaign, right? In the United States today, we have a very messy political system where, political parties are not allowed to do certain things, and individuals can only do certain things when they make payments to political campaigns and so forth. And so that we've created this system of super PACs where it's not really that company. It's some other company doing it. And, you know, secretly in the back end, maybe they know what's going on and maybe they don't. Basically, I think what's happening here is that Microsoft paid a company to help them promote the Xbox One. And this company went off and did what they did. It had nothing to do with Microsoft. They never endorsed it or okayed it. And everyone's reporting that they did. And I don't understand that because there's a lot of evidence showing that this company did what they did. There's no evidence that Microsoft had anything to do with it. The legal agreement that these video bloggers agreed to is not with Microsoft. It's with this other company. And so I think the general story is that this kind of thing happens a lot. In this case, Microsoft didn't do it. And the real story is that people are reporting that they did. And that shows you the kind of weird anti-Microsoft bias that exists in the tech and in the general press.
But why
that
can't...
you hear Microsoft, you're like, of course they would do this.
But every company does this. It's called paid sponsorship.
Except Microsoft.
So, no, it's a paid ad.
For example, all I'm saying is, I have one of the more popular Windows-based websites in the world.
Very popular.
Microsoft doesn't pay me to write reviews. They don't pay me to be positive or whatever about Microsoft. They don't pay me anything. If this system existed, I would be part of it. You know, I just would. I mean, there's no way I wouldn't.
And this why am I not part of it?
Why, exactly. By the way, to be clear, I want to be part of this. I want to be paid.
We all like
money.
I'd
like to be paid. Yeah, I want
no,
the
but
money.
If Microsoft is taking out an ad on a yeah. So if Microsoft is reaching out, let's say to me, and they said, hey, you know, Xbox is coming out. We want you to do a video on the Xbox. We want you to talk about the Xbox. Then I highly doubt they're telling these YouTubers, listen, guys, but don't mention that we're paying you. Shh.
You're right. So actually in the agreement, they have to say they're not being paid. They can't say that they're being paid to do this, which, again, you may have a moral issue with. I do.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
I do.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
I mean, we've taken out a bunch of ads and we've done product ads before, but I've always stated that, you know, I'm being paid by these people. Or after the fact, you know, I've done a review on a product and I've loved it. And then the company's come and said, hey, do you want to take out an ad? And I've taken the ad, but afterwards I've constantly said, this is now an ad.
Every once in a while, you know, in the old days, I would write an article about something, you know, obviously related to Microsoft, related to whatever. And every once in a while I'd see this feedback. Someone would say, oh, that's interesting. Here you are promoting some Dell product and they're advertising on your site. I have no idea who advertises on my site. I have nothing to do with that. I've never once done anything like that.
Are you talking about like a banner ad or?
Yeah, like an ad on the site. Like that's what do you think? I sell ads on my I don't know what's going on with the ads.
I've had that same exact problem, and I had that problem last week. So one of the shows that we have on the network is The Bald Truth, and Spence, it's about hair loss, and he's a consumer advocate for hair loss. And he talks about, you know, the bad doctors that are ruining people's lives and the good doctors, but he's a consumer advocate. These doctors have realized that they could get an ad spot by contacting Daily Motion or Ustream or whoever. I'm just naming names, like our live streaming sites.
Yeah.
And they're putting hair loss commercials for the doctors before the videos on GFQ. Now, that's a conflict of interest, right? Because we're saying we're not promoting you guys. You guys suck. And all of a sudden, right. here's a mid-roll for whatever medical group. We've actually contacted them and said, listen, can you swap them out? And they said, no problem, we'll do that. But we don't have control over that. And you don't have control over what the banner ad is saying.
No.
It's random.
I literally don't have control. More to the point, I literally have no notion of who's doing. I don't know. I wake up every day and it is what it is. These days, it's nothing. I mean, these days, the ads on my site are a joke. But, you know, it doesn't matter. I'd have nothing to do with it. You know, like I just don't. So
I talk about advertising and the way that people make money. Paul and I have been talking about certain ideas with the show and certain things that we're going to do with ads, but really, for streaming media, banner ads and stuff like that, that's a thing of the past. I mean, there's so many different ways to generate revenue with what you're doing online.
I have discovered almost none of them, by the way. But yes. I'm told that's true.
I'm amazed. Brian Brushwood and Tom Merritt do that show Cord Killers. First of all, it's a phenomenal show. It's about cutting the cord and abandoning cable. It's actually one of my favorite shows right now. And they don't have an ad currently. What they're doing a crowdfunded project where people are paying them per episode X amount. They're committing to it. It's a recurring payment. And they pay them every week. And it's phenomenal. And these guys are making some bread with this.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And it's totally, you know, breaking the mold of traditional you know, ways of generating revenue. It's unbelievable. By the way, that's a phenomenal show. And I think anybody that's watching our show, they should definitely check out the show. They'll really enjoy it because it's a lot of the stuff that we talk about with, you know, abandoning cable and how they're screwing people. They talk about it. Paul, I got motivated by you and I called Fios and I told him, my friend Paul Theriot just left you guys. Those were the exact words. And I said, you could go to winsupersite.com. I pretty much, you know, I'm paying way too much. What could you do? And they cut $60 off my bill a month.
Yeah.
Just like that.
We did that for a while. My wife would call and say, hey, we're paying for these two landlines. We'd like to get rid of those. How do we do that? I'm like, oh, no, don't do that. Here's some money, you know, off. And it was funny how they kind of did that. So
they'll pay you to keep the service. I mean,
by the way, I'm sorry to interrupt, but
yeah,
it just occurred to me, you know, you've been looking for this this article on my website and you can't find it.
Yes,
I can. Of course, I have the original on my server. So I could send you the graphic.
Can I pull it up on the screen or no?
Yeah, I could put it into the show notes.
Okay. Yeah, if you could do that.
Sorry, go on. I'll make that happen while you're describing your
Now device. I'm thinking of a big conspiracy on why it's pulled from your website. Like that's
no,
what's
it's
going
because we
my mind.
No, there's no conspiracy. It's because we moved CMSs and some stuff got lost.
I like the bigger conspiracy theory on this. That's what I like. So we are drinking today. You probably could tell if you're listening because our words are getting a little slurish. I'm having a Malbec, and Paul is drinking a local beer about 5 minutes away from him. I'm snowed in at this point. Let me see what's going on. Yeah, it's a disaster outside. It's really bad, and I'm going to have to shovel right after this. So we're having a good time. It started?
Yeah.
Oh, fun. I think you're posting it now. There we go. Look at a little jet. Oh, that's it. This is the look. Oh, let me pull this up. Can I make this?
Yeah, like you're asking me about this content I created, and I was thinking, you know, if only there was some way I could find this thing that I made.
There you go.
Oh, wait.
That's it.
I save everything I write.
This is absolutely beautiful.
Well, I mean, so two things here. On the one hand, what you see is a sidebar kind of a thing, a part of the start menu over on the right. I actually, thinking back on this, got to remember when I did this, Windows 7 was the norm. The Windows 8 stuff was new. It was confusing. You know. So they hadn't gotten rid of Metro yet. I'm sorry, of Arrow. And so forth. I don't think that thing floating over there in the desktop makes any sense. But that other stuff you see there, the Metro apps floating as Windows. Yeah, I mean, why not? You know,
but I think the thing on the side, that sidebar.
I think the way to do that would be like my second design where I had
the snap. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes more sense.
No, I think this is great. It's a pretty looking OS.
Look at all those apps I don't run anymore, too. It's like
what do we have
kind
there?
Of Eclipse environment, Amazon Cloud Player, Zune, iTunes.
A lot of Office stuff.
Yep, Safari.
Yeah, it's very cool. So you want to open this thing up?
Yeah.
Okay, so I...
I know what it is, by the way.
You do? Oh, do you really? I don't remember what it is, so let's...
It makes sense. When you see it, you're going to be like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Let's go to this camera. Here we go. So here it is. I'm going to open it now live because I wanted to save this. I'm probably going to be disappointed when I see what this is. So
I don't know. I mean, I
cut the sides in advance. Oh, look. Cool packaging. So it says push open here. So let's tear this open. This one's even better. It's actually a pretty packaging.
I'm going to give you another graph.
Okay.
I'm interrupting all over the place.
Comes with some tape. Comes with a little box. I really have no idea what this is. Clips. A bunch of... Oh, wow. It's lighting. Okay. Yeah. So it's strip lighting. LED. And it comes with a RJ45 end. And I'm guessing it goes into this box. A bunch of these. And I don't know what this is. What the hell is this? Oh, is this like a European outlet?
Yep. Yeah, that's
oh,
UK.
Okay. So it has all different.
Little adapters, probably
plugs. So I'm guessing this I guess this little box controls the lights. Is that what it is?
I think so.
And what do you do with it?
It's for backlighting a monitor or a display.
Huh.
Different colors.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember this. Here's the instructions. Light pack. This is what it comes with.
Complete with a pink unicorn and a rainbow.
Light pack instruction guide. It's actually done really well, the book. So it shows you got to wire it behind the TV. You plug it in. But how do you control this thing?
This is like the lights you see under cars that are like thumping up and down on the pavement.
Yeah, but how do you control this? That's what I want to know. So it plugs into this thing, and then what?
Right. Maybe it's automatic.
Oh, God. This is going to be fun today. I'm going to get drunk and start hooking up all these lights. So this is what I got. Light pack. I guess I'll do it tonight. But I'm still curious how you control this thing. I wonder if it's web-based.
Maybe it's smartphone-based.
Could be. Oh, no. It needs to connect to a computer. Ugh. That's so dumb. Why would you do that? Who does that? Who connects it to a computer to control it? Fun. That's what I got. So you got another photo?
Yeah, this one has more of a fleshed out kind of sidebar-y kind of thing.
Okay, so here you go. There you go. Well, that's nice too.
These are from the Paul Theroux archives.
That nobody, you know what you should do? Just print them and sell them.
Right.
Have like a whole gallery with them.
By the way, this is from 2 years ago, almost exactly today.
That's really funny. That's funny. Yeah, so it is from 2 years ago. Yeah. So that was my pick. It was very anticlimactic. It wasn't as cool as I thought it would be.
Sorry.
Sorry, ruined it. But why would you need to connect it to a computer? So who has a computer?
That's what people use, computers.
Oh, you think it's for a computer and not like a TV?
Yeah,
I would imagine you want it behind your TV.
Yeah, that makes more sense. But it's possible that this was a computer display thing.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to play around with it. Paul, let's talk about Beats Music.
Yeah.
Or Beat Music. Beat Music? Beats Music.
Beats Music.
A lot of people like it.
Yeah. I've tried it on iOS. I guess the Android version's out as well. There's a version coming for Windows Phone on Friday, which is why I'm kind of interested in it, because to date, the only full service, like online music service that works everywhere is actually Xbox Music, even though nobody uses it. And I was curious to see whether this was a viable alternative for that service. I would say that it is, actually. I mean, I think that its closest relation is probably Spotify as far as its capabilities and how it looks and works and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of a busy little app. But, it has some interesting differentiators. You know, they've hired people to curate music. They have a huge collection of custom playlists and so forth. And they have a cool kind of a Mad Lib style interface. I should just bring it up so I don't get this wrong. But the way that it works is it's called the Sentence. I don't know if you've looked at this yet.
I just installed it.
It's kind of cool. So you let me just get to it. So you go to this part of the UI called the Sentence, and it says I'm blank and feel like blank with blank to blank. And so, for example, mine right now says, I'm on the street and feel like driving with my family to the 80s. And the idea is you fill in those blanks to, you know, create a playlist.
Okay.
So, for example, the first one, it says, I'm, you know, somewhere. And some of the choices are at a party, at the gym, in the car, in the future, on the subway, on a boat. And it's supposed to meet both your mood and your situation. So maybe you're working out, you want some kind of aggressive hard rock music.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't see any of that because this is what I'm getting on my phone when I try to run it. Unfortunately, Beats Music has stopped.
I see.
Well, thank you, Android.
You know, I'm at the beach, I'm at my computer, I'm in bed, that kind of thing. So it's kind of neat, but they also have like curated playlists. Which you can do by like genre, obviously by curator. So there's famous people, whatever, but also by activities. And some of these crack me up. It's like, some of the activities are barbecuing, breaking up, celebrating, chilling out, cooking, dancing, dreaming, drinking, driving, entertaining. It's a lot of them. I mean, it's pretty cool, you know, studying, vacationing, you know. And so within each of these is not a playlist, by the way. Each of these has anywhere from 20 to 40 playlists.
Yeah.
So, for example, I'm working or working out. There are 40 playlists. One of them is by Kanye West, right? Some of them I'm not sure who they're from, but it's a pretty good amount of content. So I think the way I would explain this is the kind of music service where the primary point of it is you want to be supplied with music as you would be on XM radio or any kind of internet radio type of thing, Pandora, you know, RDIO, iHeart Music, Spotify.
Yeah, so it's randomly selected, but you're kind of telling it what you want.
Yeah, what brings it to the next level, though, and this is kind of like Xbox Music Pass type functionality, is you can also go in and just browse through the collection. They have 20 million, you know, songs, whatever. So you can go in and say, well, I like this artist. Let me search for this artist. You can download their albums. You can put them on your phone, and you can listen to that stuff offline. You can download these playlists. You can download a radio station. They don't call them radio stations, but, you know, these playlists, basically. And so you can do the offline thing. So there's no free version of it. You have to pay. It's $10 a month, which is the typical price for something like this. If you get it through AT&T, which doesn't help if you're not on AT&T, they do have one advantage there, which is there's a $15 per month version, which works with up to 5 users mm-hmm. and up to 10 devices, which is kind of awesome for a family. Like right now in my family, we pay for 2 Xbox Music Pass subscriptions, myself and my daughter. We pay for Spotify. We pay for Pandora One, which is the paid version of that. This might be a very interesting way to consolidate all that down to something that's less expensive. So it's funny because it's brand new, but why another music service? But actually, I would say for a kind of a modern cloud-based music service, you know, it's right there.
But could you see replacing any of your other services with that service?
Yeah, I mean, I could. Now, this isn't going to appeal to certain kinds of people. So if you have a lot of music that's kind of obscure and locally stored and you want to get it up to your, to wherever, something like iTunes Match or Google Music might be more appropriate. This isn't designed for people who are hoarding music. I mean, it's designed for kind of slightly more forward-thinking type stuff. It falls into copyright this, I guess, this sort of notion that, Paul's theorem of cloud computing is that, cloud computing is all about, just letting go. That if you spent a lot of time curating music and getting your meta tags correct and all that kind of baloney, you're not gonna like it.
Yeah.
If you can let go and just let it happen, in other words, I have specific groups that I like, and I want all their albums. And for example, on Xbox Music, certain albums by my favorite groups are not available. I have those albums myself. I've ripped them to, MP3 files. I can't access them on that service. That blows, and it kind of bothers me. But again, it's about letting go. Is it super important that you listen to that particular song right now?
But is it the Beats name that's kind of selling the product? If it was some other branded... Well,
that's part of it, yeah. So there are two main reasons I looked at it and that I think about it. One, and neither one of them is that it's the Beats name. one is this family plan. One of the questions I get asked about with Xbox Music is, my wife and I both have Windows phones. We want to both use the same Xbox Music Pass subscription. Can we do that? And the answer is... Actually, now the answer is yes. But before the Xbox Music app, the answer was you can, but you have to sign into the phone with the same account, which people don't want to do.
Yeah.
So that got kind of messy. Even if you do that, you're limited to 4 devices because that's the limit on Xbox Music. So this one has that family plan notion. I like the notion of family plans, whether you're talking about Xbox Live, which doesn't exist anymore, or this. Family plans make sense. That's one thing that spreads the wealth. Like Office 365 Home Premium is basically a family plan. $99 a year, you can spread it out to family members. Nice. The other one is that it runs in Windows, right? So you would expect a service like this comes out on iOS, comes out on Android, and that's the end of it. But this one's supporting Windows Phone explicitly. That matters to me.
And that's great. Use Windows
Phone. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a rarity when something launches. When something launches.
Very interested to see that app. Yeah. So it's Friday, supposedly, on Windows Phone.
Very cool.
Yeah, it looks good.
I'm going to play around with it. If I can get it to work on Android, I'll obviously.
I will. If my Android phone hasn't exploded when it hit the floor, I'll.
Isn't that crazy? And this is the exact reason why I hate Android.
Let's see.
I talk about it all the time. People think, no, it's just you. It's your phone. You're using something that's old. This is a brand new phone. The excuse is going to be, your phone is too new. The LG G2.
Oh, that is a brand new
phone. Yeah. It's literally a couple months old. So that's the, and that's why I drink, guys. Tasty wine. Are you done with your beer, Paul?
Not yet.
Before we wrap up, I did want to bring up one more topic, and I thought this was interesting. Intel, about 2 years ago, they made a big deal about their web TV service that they were going to launch.
Right.
They were launching an internet-based TV service, and it kind of fell flat on its face because they couldn't get the licensing agreements, I guess, from, I guess, everybody. It was dubbed OnQ.
Right.
Nobody would license
it. It wasn't a small problem. It was amazing.
Yeah, so on-demand programming, obviously, it's easy. You could do that. But the problem was with over-the-air and live content. Nobody was licensing this thing to them. Nobody was giving them the rights to air live programming. So it kind of fell apart, and it was a total disaster. Verizon's buying it. Intel had wanted $500 million, but I think Verizon wanted to spend $200. So somewhere in that range, they bought it. And they're looking to integrate it very soon in their services because Verizon is kind of taking a different approach with live programming. They do want to offer live programming on the internet. Interesting that Verizon is the one grabbing it because they've been the one that's been really an advocate for IPTV over the last couple of years with Fios. So Verizon has now acquired these guys, the service, from Intel.
Yeah, that makes me a little nervous.
They bought another company. Do you remember that? Like last year, they bought another IPTV company.
No, but the point is that Fios owning an IPTV based service makes a little bit of sense, but it doesn't. It never made sense for Intel to own this thing. Like Intel was never going to be the company that made this take off. But Verizon, when Verizon buys something like this, there's always that issue where are they going to limit this to Fios customers or to their customer base on phones or whatever, and I think that's the issue that I have with Verizon primarily.
I think
that they suck.
See, you had a bad experience with them. I've never had a bad experience with Verizon, except I mean the cell phone stuff is awful. The service is disgusting here, but
it's just disgusting. It's
disgusting. But their TV service is pretty cool. My biggest problem is that all these networks compress the crap out of their television networks, and it looks awful. So really, if you want to get a pure experience and you want to get a really good experience, ironically, Netflix has a much better picture quality than Verizon does. I mean, if you have the bandwidth, obviously, if you have the bandwidth to do it.
Yeah.
Like, everything's in 1080p.
Right.
And when you go
And by the way, the internet connection is rock solid.
We watched, I'm a big fan of Archer. And
by the way, just want to point out Archer real quick.
Yeah.
This season is fantastic.
I haven't seen it. I just bought.
This is fantastic.
I just bought season 4 on Amazon.
Right.
So
it's on Monday nights now.
Yeah.
We're only two shows in, but
I haven't
last season
seen
they lost me a little bit. There were a couple shows there where I was like, man, they're really milling this in.
What season is it now? 5 or 6? Oh, there's Paul. He's gone. That's weird. It didn't even drop. It just said finished. I guess it's time to end. All right, let's bring Paul back. That's so funny. You know, you insulted Archer, you insulted Verizon, and see what happens?
You know what happens? So
what?
Let me show you what happens. So
yeah.
I'm holding the phone, which has a cable connected to it. You can't really see it. So if you can picture the cable, does this kind of thing when it hits them. It actually hit the space bar in my lap, my keyboard here.
And it just disconnected.
And apparently, the disconnect button, actually, it still is when I look at it. the disconnect button is selected in Skype.
Oh, that's really
so
funny.
When it pressed down in the space bar, it disconnected.
I was like, well, that's it for the show. We're done.
Yeah. It's just we're done. By the way, I was able to get the Beats Music app running in Android. I realize that's not a major accomplishment.
Well, maybe it's me then. Maybe I'm breaking everything.
It says, I'm in a field and I feel like starting a riot with strangers to indie.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Very avant-garde, Paul.
No.
But I was watching Archer on Netflix, and it looks, I mean, it just looks beautiful on Netflix. And it's a cartoon, yeah, but it's actually, you could visibly see the quality difference when you go over to the networks and you're watching it on like FX, and you start seeing the jaggies around the edges, and it just looks awful. It just looks awful compared to Netflix. And really, there's no excuse why it should look so bad on the network. And I'm able to get a much better picture quality on the internet, so that was my point. So, I'm probably going to kill cable.
You're cutting the cord is what the point is. That's
I am cutting hearing. The cord very soon.
That's what
I'm just waiting. Any minute now, I'm going to do it. All right, Paul.
It's snowing.
Is it snowing bad? We'll wrap it up.
We're so screwed.
Well, listen, I got another two bottles of these, so I'm going to.
Right.
I'm going to get
belligerent
tonight.
I'm just
going to
drink the rest of this and take a nap, which hopefully will last until Wednesday morning.
I'm going to get some Chinese food from down the block. I got a Chinese food restaurant. I'm going to order some food and finish my wine and hopefully wake up and it's Wednesday afternoon and all the snow is gone.
Right.
Magically.
Magically gone. Well, the nice thing about the snow is that once it's gone, it's going to be like 9 degrees outside.
Oh, wonderful.
So we got that going for us.
Yeah. It'll just freeze over and we'll slip and slide everywhere. WindsorPerset.com for all things Paul Theroux. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarin. You can follow Paul at Theroux on Twitter. I'm going to hang out after the show. If you're watching live, I'm going to be hanging out for a little bit, trying to play around with this light box or light pack, whatever it is.
You should try to connect it.
I am going to try to connect it, and I'm probably going to dismount my TV, and it's going to be a total disaster.
It's funny because I see that thing, and I vaguely think, I think I remember you doing this.
I kind of do.
I think
do,
I
yeah.
remember you buying this or whatever, contributing to the Kickstarter.
No, I remember doing it, but I don't remember what exactly it was. And this is definitely not what I ordered. Like, I didn't think I was ordering this. I actually thought it was like a box and you could control it via the web and you could kind of tell the colors. It maybe had like a Wi-Fi chip inside or whatever. But this apparently you got to like program it. Ugh. No one wants to do that. Nobody wants to do that.
Nobody wants to.
All right, guys. We'll see you all next week. Good night and take care.